So, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Sebastian Alvarez. I'm from Unilever. I'm an R&D Innovation Director at Unilever. My background is in chemistry, and I've been developing my career in Unilever, developing breakthrough technologies for deodorants. My connection with the metal industry probably is linked to when I was representing Unilever at the Aerosol Association, BAMA, for those who may call, know it. And I ultimately became the chairman of the trade association in the UK as well. So I'm really happy to be here, not in the Aerosol Association, but in an industry like the metal one. So very happy to be here today. And what I will be doing is I will be sharing with you what we do in terms of aerosols, where we use a lot of aluminium in those aerosols. But also I want to share with you a case study of a new product we developed that is using stainless steel, for which we are looking for new partners to take that new journey looking forward. So a little bit about Unilever. It's a company that was established more than 100 years ago. It's one of the largest consumer goods companies in the world. And it's known for its big brands, but also because of its beliefs that doing business the right way will drive superior performance. And that's embedded in the purpose of the company, which is to make sustainable living commonplace. Yeah. The company is present in more than 190 countries around the world. The turnover is over 150 billion euros, and more than around 2.5 people use our products every day. So you would understand then when we say that we want to make sustainable living commonplace, we have the scale to achieve that. So everything that we do with our products will have a big difference for people and the planet. And in certain cases, I will explain, when we have a leadership position in the market, then we try to bring everybody in this journey as well, and hopefully do good for, as I said, for people and the planet. These are the type of brands that you may be familiar with that Unilever is responsible for. And then, but today I'm going to be talking more specifically on my field of expertise, which is deodorants. Yeah. And then, we sell deodorants under the brands of Lynx, Dove, Sure. You may be familiar with them. And by having an audience here in the UK, I'll probably say that the majority of you use a deodorant on a daily basis. I will probably say that most of you will use an aerosol, okay? And that is because we know that in the UK, you have more than 70% of the market is linked to aerosols, okay? And I'll quote this fact because I'll come back to it later as well. But more importantly, because aerosols is one of the biggest product in deodorants, and we have a leadership position. We are number one in this product category globally. And if I were to say that one in two deodorants in the world are sold by Unilever, you know, you can get a sense of how much we make. And within that, our lead applicator is the aerosol. And we sell them under these brands that you may be familiar with. And they are made by our products, an aluminium can, a valve, and then we have what we call an actuator, right? So this is it. This is the aerosol that you would normally use. And I have some examples here of empty ones, of the ones that we sell. One of the key features on these products is that they contain a highly flammable propellant and under pressure, you know. So we need to treat them with much care. And safety is our number one priority. We cannot take any risk there. And so when we are making aerosols, we use a lot of material in the aluminium to make it resistant, yeah? And so when I said that in Unilever we want to drive a better future in terms of the impact of our behaviors and the products we use in the environment, that's the first place we look into an aerosol packaging will be the can. And how do we look at it, and what are we doing? And as leaders in the market, the first thing to do is to lightweight the can, you know, but it's easier to say than do it, because as I said before, this needs to resist 8 bars of pressure. It's flammable. It's not you wouldn't take a risk in there. But looking, you know, partnering with the right engineers and then looking at the supply chain, how the can is made, how do you feel it on the line, then you can apply modeling techniques to understand what sort of variations, optimizations can you do. and then you validate it, and then it remains safe. And we are already ahead in terms of lightweighting the cans, using less aluminium in the cans. With that, by achieving that, we are reducing the impact of this product if you were to dispose it. Another approach we take as well is the introduction of post-consumer recycled aluminium. If you go back probably 5 years, every aerosol made of aluminium would have been using virgin aluminium. Yeah, and if you don't recycle it, it will go to waste, right? And, you know, in this day and age, that is not acceptable. So we have been starting to develop new metal alloys. And in these new alloys, what we can do is introduce post-consumer recycled aluminium, sometimes from the beverage can industry or from the processes in the industry. And then the trick is to get the good quality of PCR aluminium so that then the integrity and the quality of the aluminium that you use to make your can remains of high quality. And we are at the moment producing millions of cans with 25% PCR. Some people claim that they may get to 100, but you will not find those cans in the market yet, you know. We are on 25%, and we are on a journey. So one day it will be 100%, hopefully, yeah? And that's our dream. But we need to go step by step. You know, it's not something that you can do overnight. Give me whatever aluminium, I'll put it in the can. Another interesting technology that we have been working on and we developed and we put it in the market is adopting the technology from the beverage cans, the drawn wall iron technology. The difference with how you make an aluminium can is that this is made by impact extrusion. So you start from a slug. I didn't bring one, an aluminium slug, and then you start to punch it until you get to this tube, and then you form, and then you get the bead, and then 25 stations later, you get this. To go from a slug to this, you need to have excess of aluminium to resist and to be able to expand it in the way you want. By doing the drawn wall iron technology, you have a sheet of aluminium, and then you roll it, you weld it, and then you minimize the amount of aluminium you use. So this brings significant reduction in the use of aluminium. But with that, it also comes the cost of transforming the industry. If I were to tell you that it may cost, I don't know, more than 50 million euros to install one line, and we need dozens of lines to produce the amount of aerosol. So, you know, the benefit is large, but the amount of investment you need to make to get that return is also equally large. We are not fazed by it. By being leaders in the industry, we take the steps that are needed, but it's not that you just flick a finger and it's done. You just need to make it work financially. And over time, I look forward to seeing that technology potentially, expanding and being further. But if you go to the market today, I will point you where to go. You will be able to find we're making millions of cans adopting this beverage can technology. As I said earlier, you know, I've been involved with the British Aerosol Manufacturing Association, so a piece of my heart is with that association as well. With them, we have been partnering with them and the other companies as well to promote recycling. So one thing is to use to reduce the amount of aluminium you use, to use PCR, all the things you do, but ultimately it's important that you also recycle the product at the end of the day. If you were to do that, then the impact goes down even further. The reality is that UK is probably the best country in the world in terms of recycling of aerosols. More than around 95% of the councils in the UK have a curbside recycling program, so you can put your aerosol in the recycling bin and it will be collected and it will be recycled. And then, but the amount of people who does that is low. And that's why education, and I still believe that over time people will embrace that behavior and ultimately minimize the impact to the environment of just simply using an aerosol. What happens is that when you recycle an empty aerosol like this one here, it goes to the furnace and it's burnt and it's remelted and then it's reused for something else. And what goes with that is the actuator made of plastic. And it's very difficult to remove. It's because of safety reasons, we need to keep it there. Otherwise, it may spray off and then create other problems. So we design it to stay in place. Then when you want to recycle it, then this is burned. So it's not recovered. So looking at being Unilever, you don't want to waste anything. You try to push as much as you can. So we do have a challenge. And if anyone has any good ideas, come and talk to me, and we will partner because we want to get there in the end. But we don't have an answer to that one, okay? And then hopefully over time, I'll come back here one day and say, yeah, we sorted it. The reality is the amount of the impact that this amount of plastic makes is really small. Relatively to everything else, is not that big. Nonetheless, we want to tackle it. But why do I say the impact is small? It's because we also sell deodorants in a different form, like a stick. Okay? This is very popular in the US. When I said at the beginning that in the UK, 80% of people use aerosols. If you go to America, 90% of people will use this one. It's all made of plastic. Okay? It is recyclable, but the amount of people that recycle it is not great. So we do have a bigger plastic challenge, not on the aerosol that I explained, but on the way we make our deodorant sticks. And it is a link to that we have piloted a new product, and we have launched last year in North America a new deodorant, yeah, which is made of stainless steel. Maybe you can hear, yeah. This is made of stainless steel, yeah, and then and it's refillable. So you can, when you finish it, you get a new refill, which when you take the lid off, you can put it, and then you keep going, yeah? So what's the benefit? Why? What's the benefit on this one? Well, we chosen stainless steel, yeah? And that's why I'm here today, by the way, yeah? This is the reason why I wanted to talk to you. It was a long introduction, but here we are, yeah? Why stainless steel? Because if you see how we are promoting it, buy once, refill for life. If you're going to keep it, first thing is it needs to last. So it needs to be durable. And with stainless steel, we can achieve that. But secondly, if you're going to keep it, you need to like it. Okay? You're not going to keep something which is probably made of plastic over time, it dries out. This one, you take a little piece of a cloth, you polish it, and it's still looking as the day one. So making it durable, making it desirable. These are the key features, yeah, that make this an attractive proposition. By the way, we can reduce 50% the consumption of plastic by doing it, yeah? So on top of that, we can achieve our goal of reducing the impact to the environment. And then this is why I'm here today, because working with stainless steel on molded things like this, we are not familiar with. We partnered with a supplier. They did something with a partner in China. We got it in the end. We piloted this in North America. But this is the start of the journey. By no means this is the final answer to our problem. So if I were to find here potential partners who want to collaborate with us from the R&D point of view, to look into alternative metals or alternative ways of making it more affordable, thinking about the sustainability of the supply chain to make this product, anything. I'm here to innovate. Yeah, that's my role. So any idea that you may have, I'd like to hear it. And if I were to inspire you, I'll probably finish my presentation with a little video that hopefully will bring to life everything that I've said, but in a more appealing way. Yeah, and with that, thank you for your attention. Yeah, and now time for questions if you have any. Yeah, I'm happy to take them.
Why did you use steel instead of recycled aluminium, for example?
Durability, probably. Yeah. Although you can achieve that with aluminium as well. Yeah, but it was a very quick development phase. So it's not that we took all the time to analyze all the options. That using stainless steel was the one that made sense to us at the beginning. Yeah, but if we were to switch to aluminium and there are good reasons for it, I'm open for a conversation.
Sebastian, thank you. I've got another question. It was absolutely exciting to see how you switching from plastic to metallic, because my heart is in the sheet metal form and I really keen to find any solutions. But the regular question, or the most painful question, which we always hear when we're suggesting to switch from plastic to the metallic one, although we have the technologies, the manufacturing technologies, which is acceptable for low and high volume manufacturing, which are energy efficient, where is the business case? we know that plastic could be recycled and it will be associated with some generation of the CO2 emission. And we know that the manufacturing process, which is associated with the metallic one, will also generate some CO2.
Yes.
So because you did this switch from the plastic to the metallic one,
yes,
do you have this vision around the business case and what are the numbers when you're switching between one to the next one?
The thing is that the answer to your question is that this will last long. Yeah, and within 2 years, you are already break even, if you want, if you're not already gaining. So provided you keep this, the equation will be positive. Depending on how long you keep it, then it could be down to zero, the impact. Yeah, it's the first step. It's the first year. We haven't got to that point yet. But provided you keep this, and that's why, going back to the other question, choosing stainless steel, this can last. Yeah, and if that's the case, then the equation will be positive. I wouldn't give you a number simply because it depends on how long you're going to use it. It will be positive within 2 years. It's already positive, by the way. Yeah. Thank you.
So thank you. It's a very interesting presentation. So how about the supply chain? Because previously you developed your product is made of plastic component.
Yes.
Now you switched over to metallic component.
Yes.
Like whether the same supplier has made this part and how?
No. We have the supply chain is different, completely different. And then one of the key things that you need to take into account here is while we may sell millions or hundreds of millions, if I want to be more accurate, of this one, the metal components here is going to be a fraction of that, because this is bought every other month or however long it takes to empty this one. You buy it once every few years, okay? So the supply chain is completely different, and you are not replacing one unit of plastic with one unit of metal. You are replacing, I don't know, 20 of them with one of this one, yeah? And that's where the equation becomes positive for you. But one of the key things is that in order for people to embrace, so one of the learnings that I'm sharing with you is that for people to really embrace this is that it needs to be desirable, right? It needs to be attractive. It needs to, and the reaction you get from people when you see this, oh, can I keep it? This is the only sample I have, you know? The minute I took it out of the pocket, someone said, oh, can I give? Oh, it's the only one I have. And that's what jokes aside, that's the type of reaction you want. When you achieve that, then you get the initial push on your benefit. That sometimes when you start with something which is just sustainability only, recycling only, you don't get the initial push, and then it's hard for you to get. We get the push. Now our responsibility is to keep it going, and hopefully going far. Okay. Yeah?
Again, a very interesting presentation.
Thank you
for it. I'd love one of the
yes.
as a sample. But how important do you see the manufacturing process? Is it a fully integrated process? Do you buy in sheet and strip and coil and then fit right through to the fitting of the deodorant? Is that a single manufacturing process?
No, we for this particular case, we partner with another company who does the end-to-end development. That's not what we normally do, because when you talk about the scale of what we do, we tend to do things ourselves. But when you are doing something new, which you don't know if you're going to be successful or not, then you share the risk and the burden with someone else. And we have a good partner, and they provide us with the finished pieces, yeah? And also they make it as well, the whole product. And I know that they supply this from China. Okay, so the metallic pieces come formed from China, and we manufacture this in Mexico, yeah? And this is a company that never did deodorants before. They set up a factory to make the product, this one. So it was all new. It was all an adventure, right? And with that, very exciting, at times painful, but here I am standing in front of you saying, if you want to be part of this, look forward to talking to you, yeah?
I'm very interested about it from a product perspective.
Yes.
Because the deodorant market is very gendered. And experts on metal aside, stainless steel tends to be identified very much as a masculine product. But it seems to have universal appeal. The one that you've got there seems to be breaking that.
This is the logo of the Dove brand, a female brand.
Yeah.
And the reaction from female... For people, everybody.
Yeah.
And also the society is evolving as well. Yeah. And so gender stereotypes are being broken, and you see new deodorant brands that are launching without being for male or female. It's just a deodorant. And we know in this product, it may be designed with a female consumer in mind, but there's this male people going and buying it and using it, and they like it, and off you go. There's no problem, you know. It's like, we don't see that. You may say that if I were to launch it under Lynx, you know, the male masculine brand, maybe I don't want to have the soft edges. I want to have a more sharper corner. Well, fine. We may look into that, you know. But these are
it just seems to be there's a lot of universal interest in it.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if it would have been designed with that, or whether it seems to be slightly more prototype, and it's the first time that you're
it's the first time we're doing this, yeah. And it was designed with a female consumer to start with, yeah? And then, because the Dove brand is this brand, is a Dove for men brand as well, but we launched it under the men as well. We launched it with a gray cup, yeah? So, yeah, there's no straight answer to your question, yeah? We can adapt.
Hi, sorry, what was the financial investment into that as a new product?
A few millions.
Yeah?
Quite a risky approach, but when you are a market leader, you have no choice. If you want to win and turn things over with 100,000K here or there, you will get around the corner. You're not going to, and we are in the business of the global market, you know, adapted to the local needs, but we have the scale globally. So, you want to change the game, you need to... But as I told you, we may choose to do it ourselves. It may be quite expensive. If someone wants to come with us, we're happy to share the journey with someone. And that's what happened in this particular case, when another company said, yep, we're happy to join you. We take the risk, of course, that we are behind them. If anything doesn't go well, they're not going to go bankrupt. But, you know, if it works, we're all happy. Yeah. And if it doesn't work, we're all safe. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.